Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to the Web on Web on Radio. I am your host. You can join in at all your games on Twitter.
Welcome to the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network of David Duenas. I'm your co-host, Steve K9 Kim, and joining me, as always, from the beautiful city of San Francisco, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Gabe, I think you could say that after a bit of a late summer, early fall hiatus, I think the boxing season officially kicks off this weekend.
Marco Antonio Rubio season officially kicks off this Saturday, but you're right. Definitely, you know, the fights are starting to come back a little bit, and, you know, we're getting little waves, and what's nice is that, you know, when HBO was out for a while, you know, back in the day, like, we wouldn't really have that many, it would seem like in recent years, not that many other options, but we're starting to get, you know, Fox Sports 1, NBC, Floyd is alluding to maybe CBS, boxing, you know, Uno Mas, BN Network, all these guys are pitching in. Wealth TV's kind of fallen off a little bit, but they were in the mix as well. The sport worldwide is definitely thriving, and it's all kicking off yet again for the fall this weekend.
We'll open up the phone lines in about 15, 20 minutes. That number, 347-215-7598. If you want to tweet us a question or a comment, you could do so at Steve, UCN Live, and at Gabriel underscore Montoya. But let's get started with round number one, where it's Mexican style from an overflow StubHub Center in Carson, California. Your main event of the night for the WBA middleweight title, Gennady Golovkin takes on Marco Antonio Rubio. And in the HBO co-feature, which is, let's be honest, the fight of the night for the WBA super featherweight world title, Nicholas Walters, the Axeman, takes on the Filipino Flash, Nonito Donaire. Gabe, I find this interesting. You read my story today. There's going to be an overflow crowd, the biggest ever at this storied venue for the tennis stadium portion of this venue. A lot of people are excited. People are coming in literally across the country for this fight that isn't anything near the best matchup HBO has had in about a year or two. It's not a pay-per-view fight. In fact, the odds are 70-1. So why are people excited, Gabe?
That's a good question. I think it's just, you know, right now it's kind of like longevity. I mean, they keep fighting Triple G. They're marketing him really well. He's at every event. He's shaking every hand. And I think, you know, K2's really put a lot into him as a brand. And I think, you know, in Southern California, there's a lot of Mexican fans, which are a very, you know, it's a very large Mexican or large boxing fan base there. But they're not just fans that watch on TV. These are fans that love to go to the games. You know, they love to go to the fights, just like they probably tailgate for, you know, their local game. A lot of these guys, you know, come out for Carson in particular. It's just a great venue. And to see him there fighting in this venue, I think people can't get enough of it. Rubio is a guy that is respectable enough that you're not saying, well, you know, you're not just throwing him, you know, some chump. This is a guy that has world-class experience. He's got skill. He's got a good corner. I don't think he stands a chance. But certainly they'll kind of, like, you know, they'll pay to see that. So I think it's a combination of things, you know. But the main thing is just they've been fighting Gennady Golovkin on a regular basis, keeping him relevant, and also his style. I think more than anything, that's where the Mexican style comes from, I think, here, not the challenge that we're throwing up.
Marco Antonio Rubio is not what I'd call a franchise Mexican fighter. He's certainly not Chavez Sr. He's not a Barrera. He's not a Morales. He's not a Marquez. But he's recognizable enough because he's been on the big stage against the likes of Kelly Pavlik, Julio Cesar Chavez, in losing efforts. But he also has a win over David Lemieux, and he's good enough to win an interim belt with the WBC, which in the grand scheme of things, within this chess game that K2 and Gennady Golovkin have to play to box in certain guys, that in itself is important. But whatever that opposite term is for out of sight, out of mind, which certainly applies to many fighters today, Andre Ward, Chavez, James Kirkland, Mikey Garcia, the contrast is Gennady Golovkin, and I think just by sheer volume, they have made this guy into an attraction. I mean, I asked this question very seriously. Gabe, in your opinion, if you take away the quartet, who I believe are the fearsome foursome of American draws, which is Pacquiao, Mayweather, Cotto, Alvarez, and maybe you got a fifth guy that's Marquez, can you name me another fighter that fights primarily out here in this continent that could draw the numbers he did in New York against Danny Gill, and then in his next fight, a couple of months later, against a Marco Antonio Rubio, who really is not a ticket seller, and then draw 9,000? Does that guy exist beyond that foursome I just listed?
Well, not really. I mean, I think what they're doing with Gennady is they're creating that guy. They're trying to, you know, it wasn't Andre Ward, you know, for all that he fought at home in the Super Six, you'd think they would have built something, and that they wouldn't be, he wouldn't be fighting to have gotten out of his contract with the late Dan Goosen, but they'd be fighting for a bigger piece of the pie, maybe, you know, out of the franchise that they built. So, no, and I think this is an interesting guy, and that he doesn't speak a lot of English, Golovkin. He's kind of like a Trinidad. His style speaks for itself. It's kind of the international language of boxing love. He knocks people out. He's there to be hit. He wants to fight everybody. And the personality doesn't turn anybody off. I don't think he's out there saying, I'm the best. He's saying, I want to prove that I'm the best. And I think that's why he resonates with boxing fans of all nationalities at this point. You know, he may not be flashy. I mean, maybe some of the guys that like more of the Mayweather style or the Hopkins style, you know, look to that and say he's not a very advanced fighter. You're one-dimensional. But I think there's a subtle craft to what Golovkin does. He's a world-class fighter. And I think, you know, the as we ratchet it up, his talent level is going to show. I think he ices Marco Antonio Rubio at 4 rounds. I think he knows what the bar is set by other guys that have faced him, and I think he knows what he has to do, and I think he's going to put on a show and end it. But in the fourth, no later than the fifth.
Gabe, I think you make an excellent point. I think as it related to Gabe Rosado, Daniel Gill, some of the other guys that he faced, like Matthew Macklin, those guys had losses, so they certainly weren't unbeatable. He was prohibitive favorites in each of those fights. So there comes a point in time when you're a Golovkin still trying to get to that marquee level. It's not about if you win, because that pretty much is a foregone conclusion. Again, the wise guys have this listed as a 70-1 fight. Whether it's fair or not, this is the reality. This is now a beauty contest. In other words, you're looking for style points. If he pulls out a tough 12-round fight where he has black eyes and he has a cut and he's bleeding in the mouth and he had to come on late to win 7-5, even though that's a win, in the big picture, in the grand scheme of things, in many ways, that win would be a loss. So I agree with you, Gabe. It's not about if you win, it's how you win. He's got to pass the eyeball test that sometimes we see a great young talent and we say to ourselves, you know, he's not fighting much, but there's something there that I believe in. As Larry Merchant says, trust your eyes. And I believe Rubio's size and the fact he's plotting is the worst combination. I think if you're going to be slow, you're better off being small. He, I think, with his style, he's a bit of a plotter. He's not going to stick and move. He's not going to dance behind his jab. I think that is tailor-made, and I do believe his toughness will work against him. And I think Robert Garcia, just my opinion, is going to have a very difficult decision to make. Yes, there's a lot of pride on the line. Yes, this thing is called Mexican style. I believe still at least two-thirds of this audience will be Mexican and Mexican-American. So they don't want to just quit. But, again, this is a heavy, concussive puncher. And I think there's going to come a point in time where all of us watching, whether on TV or ringside, we're going to say to ourselves, Robert, when are you going to go to the bullpen, take out that towel, and throw it in? Gabe, let's talk about the fight fans, the purest real main event. The X-Man, Nicholas Walters against Nonito Donaire. Gabe, I'm going to get this out of the way immediately. I'm chopping that wood. I'm going with the X-Man. I think he stops Donaire late. I think very simply, strong, rugged guy. I think he's got more passion. And here's the bottom line. I don't think Donaire is a real 126-pounder, Gabe.
No, I agree with you. I think that's the thing. And even if he, you know, he's fighting at 126, I don't think he's built himself into a 126, you know, regardless of whether he's natural to it. There's ways you can do it. You can build yourself up. I just don't think that, from what I'm understanding, that he's in the condition, that's what he's done with his conditioning. I expect him to be soft around the middle. I think he gets broken in half to the body. Maybe his speed is a little bit of an issue early on, but I think Walters just follows his lazy punches right in, takes advantage of the technique that isn't always the crispest, and breaks him down, like you said. It's interesting. I mean, I think Rubio gets just – Robert Garcia is not going to have to make a decision about whether or not to stop the fight. Rubio is going to get knocked out. In this fight, I think that the corner pulls it for Donaire sometime after the 10th round. I think he'll have had enough, but I think he'll go on. I think he's a sturdy guy. He's got a good chin, but it's just going to – Walters is going to be way too much for him physically.
You know, I keep going back to that fight in Macau against the other South African, Vetyeka, where it seemed to me Vetyeka got knocked down, but he was more than willing to fight, and yet they basically engineered it so he was going to win. And I said back then, Nonito Donaire gets the win, Robert Garcia gets the save. Well, I believe in Nicholas Walters, and I know for at least a year and a half, 2 years, Rudy Hernandez, who hands out compliments to modern-day fighters like manhole covers, has told me from the very beginning, even though he works with him, I trust his judgment. He says, Steve, we got a real, authentic fighter here. And going back to that training situation, Gabe, I thought the one chance he had to really win this fight and turn back the clock 3-4 years was to sacrifice, leave his kid and his wife alone, and make it hard on himself and have a real training camp in Oxnard with Robert Garcia and live a Spartan lifestyle. And I heard just like you, Gabe, it hasn't happened. And with that, all I got to say is one thing. Timber!
Yeah, I mean, I think you get what you train for, you know. And I think that's what's happening here, is that for a long time, Nonito has felt as if, you know, that he could kind of dictate things. And I think that's where everything has gotten off the rails. On one hand, you know, he was putting together the right team, and he had all the right people, but he was also providing the most important piece of that puzzle, which was discipline and kind of being regimented in what he was doing. That's the only way you can get in better shape. You can't, you know, do some sort of like, you know, intense physical workout, but you only do it every once in a while. These things, your body has to be built up, broken down, built back up. And it's got to be systematic. It has to make sense. I don't think Donaire's camps have been making much sense for the past 3 or 4 fights. So I think that's going to cost
them
here.
What do they say about people who hire themselves as trial lawyers? They have fools for clients. I think the same applies when you essentially train yourself. So that's this Saturday, Mexican style, on HBO from a sold-out StubHub Center in Carson, California. Moving on, Gabe, I don't even know what to say about this travesty and this abomination at the Beau Rivage on Friday Night Fights, a special edition on the Deuce. We have a new IBF middleweight champion at age 36. Jermaine Taylor beats up a hobbled Sam Solomon, knocking him down rounds 7, 8, 9, and 11, winning by the scores 116-111, 115-109, 116-109. But, Gabe, it wasn't just this fight, which was just an awful, sloppy mess. This whole card, to me, I'm just looking at this going, I can't believe this cannot be the best boxing has to offer. And people say, well, it's not HBO or Showtime. You're right. In many ways, it's worse that it's on ESPN because now you're dealing with many more homes. I was actually embarrassed for the sport of boxing on this night.
I thought it was very fitting that this card was on the Deuce because it just smelled like somebody dropped one. It was just a really awful night of boxing. And, you know, I mean, there's just only so many hours in my life. And watching this thing, you know, I thought Andre Durell, that was interesting. I think he's got my interest again in stopping Nick Brinson. I mean, he's supposed to do that, but he's supposed to get the win. But he's got me intrigued. I like the activity. And I like that he wants to keep fighting and get more rounds and get back to where he was. We'll see if he can. But the rest of the card that was televised, horrible mismatches. Guys that didn't even look like they were in the same weight class. A guy that didn't even look like he knew how to fight. It was just really embarrassing to watch. I was like, this is a terrible, like you said, like it's ESPN. They're in more homes. What an awful commercial for us. And it's odd to see, you know, Teddy, I guess, his way of commenting on how bad the card was to make predictions about how the fight would go. And, you know, I'm all into that. I did that with my mismatch report. But I thought the commentary was lacking. I think they really needed to lambaste this whole card. And not the fighters, but but the people that allowed this to happen, the regulators, you know, we always talked about that with the Manny and drug testing, let the regulators regulate. But my question has always been, and it continues to be, well, what happens if they don't? Then what? And this card was an example.
Very simple question. Jermaine Taylor is now a belt holder. I give him credit. He won the fight. He did what had to be done. So is that vindication of Jermaine Taylor and everyone that endorsed this and pushed this? Or is this really an indictment on just how mediocre Sam Solomon is?
Well, or how old. I mean, his body fell apart as much as anything, right? You know, and this is, you know, again, you got a fighter that just his knees just give out. I just found it very interesting. You know, the coming into this, we were talking about the brain, you know, injury of Jermaine Taylor. We weren't talking about the positive drug result, the fact that it was a 40-year-old guy who was experiencing a resurgence in his career. You know, I don't want to denigrate anybody, but this thing was just ugly from top to bottom. And I thought the fight just was everything that it should have been because it shouldn't have happened. Jermaine Taylor shouldn't have been in the ring. And so I just thought the fight was every bit as ugly as the event.
Gabe, here's the question.
I don't know who it's an indictment of. Maybe it's just an indictment of the sport.
Hassan Endam, who put on a very nice display of boxing against Curtis Stevens the week before, is now the IBF mandatory. The question is, I know they have rules, and again, I laud the IBF for this. They follow their own rules on a more consistent basis than any sanctioning body by far. My question is, does Endam, who I think would be a favorite over Jermaine Taylor by a wide margin, does he actually get the fight? Now, the reason why I ask this, last couple of days on Saturday, now this is how naive and stupid I am, Gabe, and obviously I should know better. The WBC puts out a statement that hit all of our email boxes that, quote, unquote, an agreement has been made between Danny Garcia and Victor Postol. So, silly me, I thought it was going to be an agreement to, I don't know, actually fighting. Well, it turns out it's an agreement to take a step-aside fee. Now Dan the Man Raphael puts out a story that, and this had nothing to do with the purse bid, but Deontay Wilder turned down $2 million as part of a multi-fight offer from Roc Nation to fight Bermain Stiverne. Gabe, let me tell you something. The fact that Kell Brook beat a Haman guy, that Vasyl Lomachenko beat a Haman guy, we know that there are rumors that Haman may start his own sanctioning body. Doesn't all of this give credence to the fact we may not be as crazy as Oliver Stone when we state such stuff?
I would agree. You know, I mean, there's one guy that's kind of moving everybody away from big fights. And, you know, it's like wondering aloud the other day of just, you know, what the heck is Adonis Stevenson doing with his career, you know? I think all signs point to that this is correct, what we've been talking about regarding Al Haymon. And in this situation, I don't think Endam, unless he signs with Haymon, becomes a Haymon fighter, I don't think we ever see that fight. And maybe even then we don't see that fight. That he's in mandatory. If Al, I think it's figuring out a way to beat a mandatory curse. Just pay it off so you don't have to make it.
Let's hit some of the Twitter before we get to the phone calls. Again, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598 from Tyler Cruz. Might we see – now, he's being serious, and that's the scary part. Might we see Floyd Mayweather fight Jermaine Taylor for the IBF title in May? Would that fight sell? Let me think about that. Hell no, it wouldn't sell. I mean, go ahead and do that, and I guarantee you Golden Boy and Top Rank – they will absolutely go with Cotto Canelo on that same date. In fact, they might even go to the same venue and say, let's go head-to-head. I think that fight, not only is it a farce of a fight, I think it would lack so much credibility. Even some of the diehard Mayweather fans would have a backlash against this particular pay-per-view.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, it's interesting because they paid Postal step-aside money. They want that belt, and maybe Peterson Garcia is back in play. But I wanted to run this by you. You know, they're getting into this war over, you know, May and September. People think Floyd's crazy if he tries to go against Canelo Cotto, which is certainly going to be that May fight. What if he went after because his company does have a New York license, you know, Barclays Center is available, the Garden might even be available. What if, let's say, a Danny Garcia fight happens with Peterson in the interim, or they just go straight to it in May. Danny Garcia and Floyd in New York near the Puerto Rican Day Parade.
You know, that's interesting, but remember this. When you go to an off-site casino venue, now you got to start buying hotel rooms. You got to get transportation. All those logistical things that don't exist with the hotel that are built in with what has been deemed to me a very, very favorable sweetheart deal by the MGM Grand to Floyd Mayweather. I've said it before, and I may be wrong, and I'll eat crow if I am. Seeing is believing when it comes to Floyd Mayweather ever fighting within the safe, friendly home confines of the MGM Grand. Gabe, do you really think he would ever fight outside his home commission based on what we've seen recently? And I think there's also another issue. New York is very expensive in a lot of ways. So I've been told by many veteran promoters, Steve, I know you hate casino fights, but from our perspective, it's much easier and cost-effective to go to an MGM Grand. And listen, the MGM Grand, whatever you want to say about Floyd Mayweather, they've been very loyal to Floyd through all his foibles recently. Mm-hmm. They still have that big mural up of Floyd. Gabe, that's his building.
That's true.
And he's going to live in Vegas for the rest of his life. There's an old saying, don't shit where you eat or where you live. I think him, after all the stuff that's happened recently, to take a fight outside of Las Vegas, I don't know politically that's the smartest move. Here's a question from Joshua on a scale of 1 to 10. What are the chances the GGG train gets a major fight / pay-per-view in 2015 and against who, Gabe?
What are the chances? I don't know. I think he's just got to keep trucking. I mean, he takes out, Cotto wants to fight Canelo. His number two and his number one are Martin Murray, David Lemieux. That could be either of those guys would be, I would love to see Lemieux versus Golovkin. Is that a big fight in terms of, it's big for boxing fans. Is he going to have that transcendent fight? I don't see anybody that can link him out to the mainstream. So I think really the course with Gennady, it's not get rich with one fight. It's longevity. It's finding the right matchup so you can have that explosive action fight that people are talking about. But I think what they're doing is working. It's a slow rise. It's not any one thing. There isn't a Trinidad, to his Hopkins out there for him, in my opinion.
Talking to Tom Loeffler last week, he said we're still going to fight four times next year. If they get through this fight clean, they're going back to Monte Carlo in late January, early February. And I think they're prepared. They understand, as Gennady would say, I understand situation. He knows. With the win over Rubio, no matter if it's 90 seconds or in the ninth round, he's not getting the marquee names. This is still a work in progress. Here's what I think they're going to do. They're going to keep exploiting the belt game. They're going to keep making guys in mandatory positions. They're going to say, as a super champion, we want this belt holder. So he's going to put guys in a corner where he's essentially telling them, fight me or give up your belt while I collect all the belts. In fact, that's why the Rubio fight was so important, because if he wins as the interim titleist for the WBC eventually after the Cotto Canelo fight, he will become the mandatory challenger of that fight. So these are very strategic moves in mind as Tom Loeffler and K2 select these fights. Here's a tweet from Andrew V. Kennedy, the president. Is GGG's hype on the West Coast a product of what he did on the East Coast, or is it more of the West Coast Mexicans? Gabe, I happen to think it's a large dose of both.
Yeah, I think so. It's just, he's a burgeoning brand. I don't know if he's a proven brand. I haven't seen him face, not so much an undefeated guy, but like a skilled guy that's been there at the top that can punch him back and can take his punch. That's what I want to see next from him. I think this will be a little something. Rubio can definitely punch, and he's got experience, but I just think he gets shaken to the core and knocked out cold. But, not to trash this fight. I mean, it's a necessary fight, and it's a good matchup. I think Rubio is a good, solid fighter, but I think that the Triple G is a cut above. Like I said, it's just he's got to keep pushing. Something I don't think we've really talked much about on the show, if at all, and it was something I was hearing when I was in L.A., is how the sanctioning bodies are now talking amongst themselves about trying to make it so that things do get funneled to one champion, that there is a champion, and then instead of calling it the WBC world champion, it'll just be like the WBC champion, the WBA champion.
Gabe,
they'll,
you know,
kind of acknowledge,
Gabe,
you know.
You know what,
yes,
the reality is? Sanctioning bodies don't like what Al Heyman is doing when he's basically telling,
yeah,
fighters, you can't take this huge payday. You know why? Because then they don't get that 3 to 6%. That hurts their bottom line. And when a guy like,
yeah,
Golovkin, who is now becoming a franchise, and HBO has given him the full backing where he'll start to get paid very well in the seven figures, Golovkin now is a guy that these mobs, the sanctioning bodies, will support. Because when he fights, it means something. Here's a question from I Am He. Has Heyman ever gone on the record for an interview? In short, no. Here's one from Brian Battaglia. Ideas on Jermaine's next opponent, Jacobs/Quillen, make most sense, or is he going to go low risk, high money, Heyman gimmies? Gabe, here's the problem with Jacobs and Quillen, for as flawed as they are, they're young and they can punch.
They can move. Yeah, they can catch,
yeah,
and counter. They can push him to the limit. I don't see. It's just the weirdest thing in the world. Like, where do you go with it? You know, and I mean, Jermaine is a guy that it was a hard fight to watch on so many levels. I just don't want to see him get punched anymore. I don't know. You know, do you go to kind of a lesser guy? But where do you go with him? I mean, Sergio Mora. Sergio's going to hit him hard. He's going to hit him solid. I mean, maybe
he's going to hit him a lot.
Make that fight. Yeah.
Worse than that, he's going to hit him a lot. And by the way,
yeah,
the new version of Sergio Mora, yeah, you could tell me Sergio Mora's been boring, he's been a stinker, he doesn't take chances, he doesn't hang in the pocket. You could say that, and I'd agree with you, all the way up until about the last 2-3 fights. If you actually watch what he's done recently, he is a much more crowd-pleasing fighter. Again, I am not calling him Tony Zale, but he is now shooting that right hand much straighter. He explained to me the adjustment he made with his right elbow that makes his right hand a little bit more stout. So, again, if they should fight, Sergio Mora wouldn't hit him hard because you can't teach punching power, but I do think he would pepper him. If you want to call in, we'll go to the calls right now, 347-215-7598. Gabe, line him up.
I guess you'd call that fight all in the timing, I guess, right?
Yeah.
In the 516, you're live on the next round.
Hey, KC, Evan from Pennsylvania. How y'all doing?
Good. What's going on, Evan?
Well, you know, it's nice to see, you know, as a boxing fan, that somebody like Triple G is sort of getting, you know, the hardcore respect and sort of inching towards mainstream respect. And, you know, with all the crap going on with the Heyman and Mayweather and all the stuff that sort of makes boxing fans, you know, doubt ourselves, it's nice to see a guy that sort of is managed the way we'd like to see all fighters managed, a guy who fights the way we'd like to see all fighters fight, get the respect that he deserves, and it's sort of gratifying. It sort of, you know, yeah, helps you get over the crap we deal with as boxing fans.
Evan, I'm posting a story tomorrow night. My story today was really about Tom Lawford, about the promotion. My story upcoming is really on Golovkin, and get some of his thoughts as we did an interview last week, and he basically said, for me, I know boxing is a business, but ultimately I will always consider it a sport or something to those terms. And he says, you know, I'm not here to just make deals all the time. To me, I love boxing. When I first did it, I didn't say I'm going to make $10 million and rest on my laurels. Now, does that change when he becomes a bona fide A-side? Because we've seen that flip-flop many, many times. But you tell most fighters of his ilk, fight 4 times a year, but you're not always going to get paid a lot, and you're going to take a haircut, and in comparison to other guys, they wouldn't do it. So this has really been a collaborative effort of Tom Loeffler, K2, and Gennady Golovkin and his management, who understood the big picture. They actually built something. And one of my biggest pet peeves was the belly aching of Lou DiBella and Sergio Martinez. The last 5 years, all they do was bitch and moan while picking up HBO paychecks every 6 months, while they were stuck at the Foxwoods. And to me, I'm like, you deserve the fate that you got for Miguel Cotto because you never tried to build anything.
But speaking on another K2 fighter with Klitschko and the whole, I don't even show the video of Shannon Briggs stalking him on the water and Klitschko falling off his. Well, I do have a question, though. Do you think that Klitschko camp, this is just, you know, the conspiracy theorist in me thinks this might be just orchestrated by both camps to draw up interest in a Klitschko fight in America, or do you think that Briggs is just that darn crazy?
Gabe?
I'm sorry, it really cut out. I could barely even hear you.
Well, let me answer that question for Gabe. In my opinion, I think Briggs is really that crazy. Do I think he's Martin Lawrence 2006, having a nervous breakdown, high and starving and dehydrated, pulling the hair of Tisha Campbell? To a certain degree, yes, he's deranged, crazy. And do I think in any way that Klitschko is involved in this? No. They always call themselves sportsmen. And whether it's naive or not, or old-fashioned, they believe in a certain amount of decorum and sportsmanship. I do not believe the Klitschkos are in cahoots with all the shenanigans here. That's just my opinion.
No. It's just too good, too. The delivery of you crossed the effing line was just too good to have been scripted or anything. Just like the guys in the doghouse, fighting that 31-minute round that we all know actually happened. At least according to everybody's unnamed Showtime sources, those guys aren't great actors either. That was actually, really happening. I don't know if Briggs is. We were supposed to have him on the show last Thursday, and he dropped out because I guess his lawyer contacted him and the cops needed to speak to him immediately. So I think I'm pretty
Gabe,
things aren't.
Gabe,
going
I got a scoop for you. Gabe, I don't want to embarrass you by scooping you. But I might as well bust it out now. And again, no insult to you. You work hard, Gabe. But he was actually boiling Klitschko's bunny rabbit a la Glenn Close. That's what he was doing. He didn't have time for you and Dave, man.
That's what it was. Yeah, we got Stone Cold Briggs. I thought it was the best video of the three, personally, though, and one of the better films I've seen in a while. It was just classic, the way he pursues him, the way they make him fall off the surfboard. If it is a lead into a movie, it's brilliant, or a lead into a fight, rather.
Evan, anything else we can do for you?
That's all, guys. The bunny and rabbit. That's a good send off. So thanks, guys, and have a great show.
Evan, I got a million of them. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Steve Kim, Gabe Montoya, on the next round on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network. Gabe, who's next?
In the 585. You're live on the next round. 585.
I'd like to get your take on two things. First off, all those reports about Deontay Wilder getting offered a five-fight deal for $7 million from Roc Nation, and Al Heyman just kind of, from reports, just didn't allow it to go through to be negotiated or signed onto or whatever. I mean, a guy like Deontay Wilder is never going to get another opportunity at financial security like that. I mean, he's, in my opinion, he's chinny. He's not as skilled as the other up-and-coming heavyweights right now. And, I mean, that gave him a chance to get real money that, I mean, I don't think, with the carry-around pocket money that Al Heyman will give him to hold him over is going to be nearly what he could have made in this deal. And I think he's taking money out of his fighter's pocket. I mean, what do you guys think?
You know what it really does, though, also? Go ahead, Gabe. Go ahead.
I've spent a lot of time. I've talked to a lot of Al Heyman fighters over the years, and none of them complain about the money. They're like the only fighters I talk to that don't complain about money. Not all of them do, but generally, like a lot of the guys are hopping around and trying to go to different people and always looking for different places to make more money. When they get with Al, they're like, the money's ridiculous, and I've never been treated better. It's not all of them have relationships with Al, but the ones that do, they're very happy. The ones that don't have the one-on-one seem very happy. I don't know. I don't know if I would have taken that deal. See?
Gabe, here's the issue, and you've brought this up before. If Al Heyman is quote-unquote just an advisor, as an advisor slash manager, if a promotional company offers you that deal, you'd be like, wow. Now, this is a deal with some security because a lot of those deals say, hey, if you lose this fight, you still have a bare minimum the next 2-3 fights. So even if you lose, you're still going to get an X amount minimum, even if you get knocked out in 1 minute, because I've seen the way these deals work. Al Heyman, by basically giving the Mutombo finger, isn't he kind of acting like a promoter?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's totally been, in my opinion, breaking the Muhammad Ali Act for years, like this whole time. And everybody's letting him. And it's the biggest open secret in the sport. But to me, what I think he's doing, just today, I was taking a car across town, and the driver was from Haiti, and we're talking boxing. He's like, hey, you into boxing? I'm like, yeah, a little bit. And we start talking. And the first thing he brings up is, but the heavyweights. Heavyweights are dying. And I think with Al going to NBC, like everybody I ever talked to says that. No matter if they, you know, they used to be into it or they're into it, the heavyweights. He's got a heavyweight that's big. He's an Olympian. He looks the part. I think he wants to get him to NBC and make all that money. I think there's money to be made here. And I think he's a special case. I mean, I know he's chinny. Steve and I, we both saw him get absolutely floored.
Harold Scanyard at the Fantasy Springs. I'll never forget it. It was like a redwood falling. I mean, it was like as if Paul Bunyan chopped him down with the mighty swipe of the axe.
Yeah, just straight down, too. Like, the legs went out from under him, as I recall, that he kind of fell like a building. And he did recover, and he did stop Scanyard, to his credit, and that says a lot about him. But he's a work in progress. You know, contrast him with Anthony Joshua, who I would love to buy stock in that guy. I think he's the real deal. But I still think you take him to NBC, you keep matching him, and with guys he can knock out and keep developing and wait for that big title opportunity, that right fight. And I think he's going to be fine. I think he's young enough that he'll have other opportunities.
Mr. Caller, you had one other question for us.
Yeah, I'd like to, do you have any idea what Maidana's next fight might be?
You know, I have no idea. I'm trying to ask various people at Golden Boy what's going on with Maidana and Matisse, but I'll come clean. As it relates to Al Haymon, guys, unless you ask their trainers who really don't know, sometimes even the fighters, even if they're the fathers of the fighters, they really have no clue, which, again, goes back to my old saying, when you're with Al Haymon, you work for Al Haymon. When they get their assignment, they'll let us know.
Right. Well,
in some ways is a good way to run a stable. You know, everybody's got to be in shape and ready because at a moment's notice there might be a date because Al has dates all over the place, you know. I mean, on one level I do kind of like that, but on another, I mean, certainly like...
But Gabe, you know me, one of my favorite fighters is the Machine, Lucas Matisse. I got to see him twice. There was a fight of the year and then kind of this really controversial premature stoppage. Now, that was September 6th. In the real world, why isn't he fighting in December? I mean, honestly, there are a handful of fighters, the four that I named, and maybe the Klitschkos and some other guys, that could fight twice a year and sustain their brand and popularity. Gabe, the rest of the guys kind of need to be on that Golovkin plan. And then I think that's one of the big drawbacks of boxing is the fact our biggest, most entertaining guys at times are shelled for 6, 7, 8 months. And I think that is a very, very big problem.
Yeah, Keith Thurman should have been a huge year for him. He's sitting there, number one contender, WBA, just chilling. I don't understand it. The best talent out there just sitting on the bench.
Listen, we got to get going, okay?
Hey, Steve, can I have one more comment here just real quick?
Yes, please do, please.
All right. Every time about an Al Haymon conspiracy theory or any sort of knowledge you have on the radio show, you send our boxing group into a tizzy. Do you have any Haymon conspiracy theories this week?
Well, I just tweeted one, and we've talked about this in the past, is the reason why he's basically nixing all these mandatories and all these purse bids is the fact he's going to start his own sanctioning body. That, in essence, he's going to be his own version of Dana White or Vince McMahon with boxing. And another rumor that I think is actually very true, the numbers that are being reported for this Al Haymon deal, which are like $25 to $50 million, go upwards a lot. There's a lot more money than that involved with this deal.
All right, thank you.
So have fun with everyone being in a tizzy at your boxing group. Gabe, who's next on deck here?
Let's try the 323. You're live on the next round.
Local.
Gentlemen, how you doing? Gabe, first off, good job with that article last week, you know, taking down Dana White.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Dana was
Steve, I love the cigars on YouTube. I love the cigars, the cigar touch on YouTube. Steve, keep it up.
Thank you very much.
Keep his memory alive.
Yes, absolutely. And it's for the record, they are not Cuban. I'm a law-abiding citizen. I would never bring contraband into this great country.
Steve, you're from
Montebello. I'm liking
the series,
but I personally think you should. What's that?
I said, Steve, you're from Montebello, so I believe you.
Orale.
No, they're not Cubans. They're not Cubans.
So what's going on? What can we do for you?
I had a quick question. It's a little complex. have you ever seen the boxing landscape be this pivotal for the next 6 months with, like, Heyman getting rid of these purse bids and the May date and everything going on with HBO, Showtime, the NBC deal? When's the last time the boxing landscape has been like this, you know, this pivotal with, like, what's going on and, like, dates and
guys
and alliances?
That's a very, very interesting question. And Kathy Duva always points out, he goes, Steve, we've had divisions in the sport forever, with King getting a certain network, Showtime being in business with Arum. Even when CBS, ABC, and NBC were doing boxing 30, 40 times a year, guess what? They all had exclusive deals with the major promoters, main events with NBC, CBS was Top Rank, ABC was Don King. Here's where it's different. In this case, in the past, while everyone shifted alliances, it was to just different networks that already existed. Heyman is so rogue, he's actually bringing his own money to the table and creating, in essence, his own league. So my answer to that is no, I've never seen it quite this fractured in this manner.
It is interesting. Things are pivotal, as the caller is pointing out, in that so much kind of hinges on what happens with those pay-per-view dates. You know, is that going to be just open warfare for the May date and for the September date? How well can Canelo perform in those? Because while he looks the part, you know, he hasn't been like superstar. He hasn't had that superstar performance at the top level. When is he going to look great? You know, I still am not really buying stock in the guy, but that's an important question. How is, you know, what's Al going to do to that NBC date? Is that just another stop on the way to something else, his own network, to go along with his own, you know, his own belt?
Al Heyman doesn't really have a bona fide draw star other than if you count Floyd.
Right.
Guys, look at the landscape. Who are the top dozen relevant fighters in our continent? And there's obviously Mayweather. He's on with Showtime. And you take away maybe Adrian Broner, the rest of the guys from Canelo, Cotto, Golovkin, Terrence Crawford, a few other guys. They're all kind of lined up at the other side of the street on HBO. So that is a key question. What happens once the Mayweather leverage dissipates? Because they only have a few fights left. And I think that was a – listen, I agree with Gabe. Do I think Canelo Alvarez is a great fighter? No, but I'm a little higher on him than Gabe because I believe with adroit matchmaking, you can create a certain mirage. But I think he is vital to the business of boxing. But I think having Golovkin on that side of the street is a key chess piece. If Andre Ward – heaven forbid, ever comes back.
I don't want to hear his name.
okay. But what I'm saying is, by the sheer virtue of being on NBC, does that necessarily create a star? Because I pointed this out last week. Remember when UFC was supposed to take over when they made that deal with Fox? Honestly, I think the UFC's popularity has actually waned the last 2 years. And that's with
their numbers
them
are down,
having
their
a deal.
Their stars are hurt. Their numbers are
right.
down big time.
Right. So we're going to find out.
Been,
is Al Heyman going to bring them?
They've been just the other sport for a while now, I think.
Yeah.
You know, they plateaued, I think, 3 years ago, and the numbers are declining. But this idea that they were ever going to stop boxing, I just don't think so.
Yeah, and you know, another issue, if you look down the line, 5 years, who's your star? I think Verdejo is Apple in 1999. Now, I think a kid like Oscar Valdez is a huge stock that I buy into, okay? Jose Ramirez can sell tickets. I think he's limited. Now, Errol Spence I like, but again, has Heyman actually ever developed a star from scratch? There's a lot of interesting things going on. I think Frankie Gomez is very good. He's with Golden Boy and not with Heyman. So you're right. The landscape is like it's like being in the Middle East and they got a lot of IEDs. You just may get blown up at any time. So watch
step. These next 6 months are going to be real interesting to see how everything falls in a line going forward.
Yeah. Anything else we can do for you?
That's keep doing what you're doing and keep Andre Ward, Mikey Garcia, and Chavez out of the ring, please.
Now, hold on. You're from Oakland.
That's my kind of
call. Okay, hold on. I got to ask him this. I can't resist. You're from Oaktown. I'm sure you support Too Short. I'm sure you support E40. I'm sure you support the Athletics. Okay, not the Raiders. When did you jump off the Andre Ward bandwagon?
I stopped after the Andre Ward, like around the Sakio Bika fight, I just was getting fed up with his little shtick. He has a little attitude around the neighborhood. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's talented at what he does. He just thought that, okay, I got a gold medal. I got this. Like, you're supposed to come see me. Like, no, that's not the way it works. You're boring. I'm Mexican. Take a risk. I'm not asking him to go toe-to-toe, but I like to see fighters that try to finish fights.
Did
you, know,
you ever?
Never tried to finish.
Okay.
Yeah?
Go ahead, Gabe.
Well, for me, when I stepped off was when the Super Six was over, and really there was everybody knew there was one more fight to be had, and it was the Bouquet fight. And I thought Ward would – I picked Ward to win the Super Six at the beginning of it, and I was picking him to whip Lucien Bouquet, who I wasn't the biggest believer in. And he didn't want to do it. They had an arrogance about it, and it just made no sense. And then I remember talking to Virgil Hunter. He wanted me to do an interview with him about, see, you know, after Farach just destroys Bouquet, you know, this is why we didn't need to fight him. And I'll just never agree with that. And that's kind of the beginnings of when I got off.
Gabe,
he's a very good fighter. Disingenuous, I think, a little bit otherwise, though.
Farach rose like the phoenix because of Andre Ward's refusal to fight Lucien Bouquet. I'll never forget about 3 years ago when I said it on Twitter. Andre Ward actually messaged me publicly and said, you don't know the business, you need to stay out of it. Looking back, at the end of the day, any non-biased observer would say, Steve, you were right, he was wrong. It really is that simple. The guy is sometimes too smart for his own good. But anyway, listen, have fun out there in Oakland, and go Derek Carr.
Yo, thank
you.
Got
a bright future.
All right. I'll see you guys Saturday at the fight.
All right, thanks a lot. Absolutely. 347-215-7598. Gabe, let's hit the phone lines.
All right. Yeah, I'm not traveling for that one. I mean, you know, if there's something significant, the Stevens fight, you know, had the allure of New York as well. But no, you're not going to get me with that. And the 914, you're live on the next round.
Yeah, what's up, guys? I got a bit of a random question. Why is it that so many celebrities are, well, not celebrities, but I guess you could say celebrities and football players become managers in boxing? Like, I've seen Antonio Gates, a few other weird guys that are up there.
Brandon Jacobs.
Money. Yeah, there
Brandon
you go.
Brandon Jacobs.
There's,
you know why?
What's the reason behind that?
Well, number one, there's a very low bar to cross over. The barrier of entry is not like any other sport, and all you need to do is really pay a $50 license, and you're licensed as a manager. And it looks easy. And your celebrities and fighters think there's a glamour to, like, oh, my God, I think I'm going to be with this guy, and it's going to help my career, and it doesn't. It really doesn't. I think you are much better off getting an experienced manager, paying him fairly, because sometimes that guy that says, I'll only take 5%, okay, what's that old saying, you get what you pay for?
Seriously, it's this, you know, the same reason there's this, such a thing as the transnational ratings board or whatever, because the barrier of entry to the media in boxing is equally low. I believe it's free. You don't have to pay a $50 entrance fee. But I think it might be the action. There's a special kind of action in being involved in boxing, and probably having a fighter in there that's your guy that you got a piece of. That might be the ultimate. He's like an avatar for you. That must be what it is. I mean, it's definitely a different feeling. You know, it, when you take people that have never been to a fight and you take them ringside, and they're either going to love it or they're going to hate it. So I don't know. Maybe those guys are just really into
it.
Vince Vaughn, right? I think he's a manager as well.
Yeah. He has the Africans that train at Wildcard. But you're right, Gabe. There is a certain glamour to saying, I got a fighter. And it just seems so glamorous and almost exotic and kind of dangerous. Like, ooh, you're in the boxing business. But
yeah,
I just never forget one of my favorite athletes. Yeah, one of my favorite athletes of all time growing up as a kid, and I absolutely worship this guy, was Eric Dickerson. Now, you want to talk about the role reversal? Eric Dickerson, during one of his holdouts, many holdouts with the Rams, actually hired Ken Norton to negotiate one of his contracts that a year later he was unhappy with. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, Eric, you know I love you. You're literally the greatest running back and my favorite Ram of all time. No one can say anything bad about number 29 from Sealy, Texas. I don't want Ken Norton negotiating my contract. I want Don King negotiating for me, you know? And by the way, Don King actually did negotiate an NBA deal for Benoit Benjamin way back when, and he was calling him Benoit Benjamin. and he got him a very good deal with Donald Sterling. Anyway.
One more thing, guys, if I'm still on. Who, in your opinion, as I look at my Kelly Pavlik picture on my desk, who's the next great white hope, so to speak? And I don't want to hear Chris Algieri because that dude's got some Greek in him. Who's the next great white hope? Please, tell me. Please, who's the next man?
Do you consider Golovkin white or Asian, Euro-Asian, Gabe?
Ukrainians.
He's Kazakh.
He might just be too trippy to be a crossover star. He's kind of like the sociopath next door a little bit. He's got that smile. He's a really nice guy, but I don't know if mainstream America is going to grab him. I don't know if his personality comes right through. Like Floyd, love him or hate him, it's a very clear personality. It's a very convoluted one, but it's you know he's the bad guy or he's the flashy guy. I don't know if Golovkin is that guy. Algieri, I don't know. He's kind of like a Miami Vice episode a little bit, but he seems intelligent. Steve, you talked to him. Seems like instantly you get integrity from him, and I think people are overlooking him. This is a two-time world champion in kickboxing, and then people are like, oh, well, it's kickboxing. It's not like it's golf. I mean, it's boxing, but with kicks. He was doing it at a high level. He's been fighting since he was a little kid. I really think he's going to be a problem for Pacquiao. And if I had to pick any fighter to put on 7 pounds and do it the right way, I would pick Chrissy Algieri to do that. I think that's only going to be an advantage to him in this. So
regarding that, Gabe, talk to me. Regarding that, Gabe, talk to me on the night of November 22nd because I got to tell you, all these people say, yeah, but he's Greek. If he beats Manny Pacquiao, all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, our great white hope, Chris Algieri. Trust me, he'll be welcomed into Middle America very quickly. Is there anything else we could do for you?
That's it. Thank you, guys.
All right. Thank you very much. Again, if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. We are here 90 minutes all the way till 5:30. Again, it's the start of Monday Night Football. Top of the hour, we'll go through some news and notes on the next round. Gabe, who's next? Gabe? Hello?
Can you hear me? Robert Palmer, 702. You're live on the next round. 702.
Robert, where are you?
No.
We missed
wow.
you.
Okay. 787. You're live.
Whoa, wait a minute. I heard somebody. Wait a minute.
787.
All right.
Okay, that's a very heavy Irish accent. I didn't understand a word of that.
Yeah, I got nothing. 787, there's another one. You're live on the next round. 787. Wow, I'm knocking them dead. I'm like Golovkin this weekend. In the 951, you're live on the next round. 951. Wow, this is an unbelievable streak. Go overseas where it's like a Skype number or 111, you're live on the next round. Maybe everybody's on mute.
Hold on. We got an update here from Robert Palmer. Hadn't pressed one, just listening. We'll call back in 10 minutes. Duly noted, Mr. Palmer.
All right. I'm going to go for the other 111. You're live on the next round. Hello, caller?
Okay, let's go to news and notes, and we'll let everyone call in. If you're just listening, can you do us a favor and just hang up and don't clog up the lines? Just a small favor. Anyway, news and notes, December 13th. It was already set a couple weeks ago. Tim Bradley takes on Diego Chavez. Now, according to Bob Arum, a fight between junior welterweights Mauricio Herrera and Jose Benavides has been set. And he also says that a fight between Matvey Korobov and Andy Lee, he was working with HBO to bring that fight over to the States and make that a triple header. So, Gabe, you be the judge. Give me your Siskel or Ebert. Bradley Chavez, Herrera Benavides, Korobov Lee. If that is consummated, thumbs up or thumbs down?
That's a nice night at the fights. I'll watch all those fights. I think the Herrera fight goes the distance, but it's going to tell us a lot about Benavides. I think the main event's nice. The whole card, yeah, that's meat and potatoes right there. It's not, looking for the next crossover star. but I think it's going to be at least one knockout on the card.
You know, I get the sense with Benavidez, who's really on the rise in 2009. There was a lot of buzz about him. He was out in L.A. working a little bit with Freddie Roach, and people were sky high on him. And then right around 2010 or 11, him and Robert Modikin, who were both highly touted prospects under the top-ranked banner, they just plateaued. And Modikin is no longer a prospect. He's just a guy trying to make a career now. I actually called his fight in Texas a couple of weeks ago where he scored a knockout over a Puerto Rican journeyman. Benavidez, to me, I still remember him getting drilled late and barely hanging on in the 10th and final round of a fight at the StubHub Center against the guy in the very, very next fight. Frankie Gomez just flat out iced him in about 60 seconds. I get the sense Top Rank, I don't want to call it a cash out, but I think it's a cash out. I think Herrera boxes his ears off. And Khorrobov Lee, you know, I'm not saying either guy is Carlos Monzon, but I actually think this has a chance to be a good fight. And I'm surprised that so many people are favoring Lee. If you take a look at Andy Lee's last performance, Gabe, you were there. If he doesn't land that lottery punch, that right hook against Julius Jackson, he was getting dominated that night at the Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, he. There are times when Andy looks like he doesn't want to pull the trigger, and I don't know what's going on with him. He's a guy that, I mean, Emanuel Stewart talked both of our ears off, just about everybody in boxing, about Andy Lee, sparring with Vlad Klitschko, and, you know, just, I remember the night of Taylor Pavlik too, and him going on at the bar.
I remember that game. We were there together. It was at the Zuri Lounge. I remember Manuel came over to us. You were with your ex girlfriend. We were with a bunch of people. I really believe I got a boy, Andy motherfucking Lee. He would slap the shit out of Kelly Pavlik. He would box it. It would not even be close. He like Tommy Hearns. And I'm like, wow, really? I got to tell you right now. I don't want to say nothing. I don't even want to say too much, but Andy Lee going to box the ears out of Kelly motherfucking Pavlik. I'm like, wow, really? Never turned out that way, Gabe.
Now, I remember Jermaine Taylor even talked about Andy Lee, that he or you know, and Kermit Cintron talked about him, that was the guy you had to beat in order to get respect in the Kronk gym, was Andy Lee. But the career, you know, I know Andy. I'm pretty fond of the guy. It hasn't always matched it. And you're right. That fight, he was losing every second of it, I thought, or most of it. And then, boom. One of the best punches I've ever seen landed and he wins. This fight has potential for serious fireworks. It comes down to how much Andy can get out of the exchanges, how much he can take Khorrobov's punch, if he can take it. We're going to find out about Khorrobov facing a bona fide 160-pound puncher. This is a very, very good fight. And Bradley Chavez, I think it's a very good style. It could be an ugly fight, and we could end up getting a lot of rounds out of Benavidez Herrera and this fight, but there also is potential for a knockout, and Tim's shown fragility.
Gabe, interesting note about this December 13th date. That's going to be on HBO at the Cosmopolitan. The word is, throughout the industry, and everyone was talking about it on Twitter, I believe on Friday afternoon, there might be a show on the other side of the street with Showtime/Heyman that'll feature fights like Jermell Charlo against Demetrius Andrade and maybe Keith Thurman and some other fights at the Mandalay Bay. I find that very interesting for a lot of reasons.
I'm just happy Keith Thurman is getting back in the mix. It's just been such a lost year for the guy, but this is just strange as well. What do you think of the Charlo and Andrade? I think the best is yet to be seen out of Andrade. I want to see him push.
You know what I think? And this is not going to be a popular opinion with the purists. I think it's proof again that a lot of boxing fans fall in love and are enamored of the undefeated record. And when you put two of them together, they automatically think that translates. I think it's a terrible stylistic fight, Gabe. I think there's going to be a lot of, as James Toney would say, a lot of shaking that ass.
Well, I hope not. I mean, I think
you disagree.
You know, I hope not.
Okay.
I think there could be a lot of that. Yeah, there could be a lot of like jab, step back, jab. You know, 1-2, step back.
Don't forget the fainting.
When you get in close.
Do not escape. Do not forget the fainting.
Yes, it would be like a lot of fainting, but you know, maybe not. Maybe Ronnie Shields is able to get his guy to move forward and do some things, let his hands go. Maybe a fight breaks out. You know, maybe we get kind of a Cortes de la Hoya situation. At some point, these young guys have to face somebody that's going to punch them back. And I think part of the fun for me is not fights like this weekend where it's sold out, but it's a preordained 70-1 shot. It's fights like this where, you know, we find out if these guys are real or, you know, or Memorex. You know, if these guys
or
are,
real. Or hold on, Gabe. Or real boring. Honestly,
yeah,
sometimes
boring,
and I.
Yeah.
And I, Gabe, I know you might disagree. Sometimes I'd rather watch that one-sided car wreck that's entertaining than that chess match that's 50-50. But then I'm a blood I'm a bloodthirsty savage. You know. Here's another issue, though, Gabe. Demetrius Andrade is with Artie Palullo, who for the most part has been on the HBO side of the street. What I'm being told is the reason why Artie Palullo took his guy, Andrade, who'd been kind of quasi-developed and showcased on HBO to Showtime, is growing resentment over what he believes is an unfair playing field where none of Aram's guys are being forced to fight Ruslan Provodnikov. So, Gabe, I think this is a part of a bigger story. Do not be surprised if Provodnikov ends up at Showtime next year.
You know, you got to go where the money is. And you know, in this day and age, I mean, right now, the guys that Ruslan can fight, there's more of them over there. I wouldn't disagree with it. I think as long as he's in the mix, as long as they're using him, you look at a guy like John Molina, who, you know, most people wouldn't pick him to beat all the top tier guys, but people want to see that guy in fights. And it's, you know, he's with Al, he's across the street. You know, we interviewed Demetrius Andrade a couple weeks ago on Leaving in the Ring, and I got that feeling that he was definitely talking to the people around him like, I'm doing my job. I got the world title. I'm winning the fights, and I'm actually being impressive, as he was in his last fight against Brian Rose. What's all your problem? Why can't I get a fight? So this doesn't surprise me.
Gabe, if they said Ruslan Provodnikov against either Lucas Matisse or Marcos Maidana, I would tell Steven Espinoza, crown you, because that's a fight I would pay to watch. So if that is the blowback for Andre Charlo, that's a small sacrifice to make for a fight of that caliber. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gabe, any other calls on the line?
Let's see what we can do. I'm going to try 702, Robert Palmer.
Robert
Palmer. You're ready for us now.
How's it going?
Robert.
What's up, man?
Welcome back.
Yeah, it's been a while since I called in, huh?
Yeah,
about
10 minutes.
There's just not been that much going on in boxing the last few weeks. So, been busy with work and stuff like that. So, there's, you know, I've just kind of checked out of it for a while. I kind of get involved.
Rob, hold on. Rob, you're from the UK, though. I mean, the one thing I really love about the UK scene is that there's a circuit. There's still fights happening, whether it's Scott Quigg, Anthony Joshua last week. I know you have to, quote, listen on the radio, but don't you keep track of those events?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I've been kind of keeping track of the UK scene a bit more, but, I mean, it's been pretty dire over there, to be honest. Like, Frank Warren and Eddie Hearn have been serving up some Heyman-style bullshit recently with the old sort of 7-1 fights and things like that. And yeah, I mean, not to that sort of level, but I mean, yeah, it's been pretty dire, and there hasn't been any kind of. I mean, I'll give you an example. There's a forum that I post on, and I run kind of like a metric of scoring the shows based on the fights that are on there, and the highest score that you could get is a 50. And only one score since September has got over 25 out of 50, which gives you an idea of kind of how bad these shows are at. And it's really not that difficult to get a good score as well. So, yeah, it's been pretty bad. The reason I'm calling this is because I get so involved in the UK politics kind of thing that I try and keep out of the US side, but I just wanted, what are the difference between, what do we know of facts with regards to Al Heyman's NBC deal and what, just the rumors, because I've heard things like he's going to set up his own sanctioning body, things like that, or when the deal's going to start. I mean, what sort of stuff do we know that's concrete, and what stuff is just kind of been thrown out there?
Nothing is concrete. Everything's been thrown out there, truth be told,
okay.
Rob.
Yeah. Because the setting up his own title, setting up his own kind of belt is one that I think maybe is a little bit too far-fetched, because the amount of money he's spending, he could probably just buy the WBC anyway for not that much money. So he could find a way around that. And he could always find ways for those guys, in my opinion, to play ball with him. So I just think he's still going to keep with those traditional belts in some sort of way. I don't see him just going off and creating the Heyman Boxing Championship or something like that.
Interesting. Gabe, your thoughts?
You know, I think it's just too soon to tell. I mean, people always tell me that the sport can't change, but it really seems to have been changing over the last few years, you know, little ways here and there, whether it's raising the anti-doping regulations, you know, Nevada moving down to 4-1 from the 6-1 that they were angry we were even talking about. I want to see what Al does with this and where he's going. I mean, if he ends up creating a popular boxing league that, you know, he ends up being the Dana White of and the, you know, the Zuffa of, and just controlling it, as long as the product is good, I'm kind of happy. The sanctioning body, so, I mean, it's tradition. It's what everybody else wants to do. So for me, I mean, maybe what he's doing is going to change the sport. Like I said, I don't know if you heard earlier in the show, there was, you know, people I was talking to when I was in L.A. For Dan Goosen's services. A few people talked to me about that they're all meeting and they want to have one champion and they want their system to last. I mean, I guess it's kind of financial chicken. And we'll see if Al can create a brand that everybody wants to buy. But, I mean, how much do you guys pay attention in the U.K. to the U.S.? I mean, for you, is it just you're a boxing fan, so you just pay attention to everything? But say if somebody's living in the U.K., how aware of the U.S. scene are they?
I mean, if I asked my friends who Al Heyman is, that, you know, they wouldn't have any idea, things like that. They'll know of the UFC, but I mean, the UFC seems to be more popular with people to wear the T-shirt than actually go to the event, if you know what I mean.
Rob, do people still wear Tap Out? That is so 2009.
it's that kind of deal.
By the way, Rob, right now I'm wearing a FUBU T-shirt, just for the record.
Well, that's taking it back. That's taking it back. I just all the way back. I guess something needs to change. I can see where Gabe's coming from in that something needs to change. But my worry is that it could get worse before it gets better, which is what has been going on this year. And I'd be shocked because the long term plan is that he's going to set up the over the top network, so the online setup, kind of like the WWE have got. Where it's going to be on, you can get it online, you can get it on your Apple TV, that kind of deal, right?
Rob, here's the issue with that, though. That's been a bust. I mean, Vince McMahon has lost a load of money with that model.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, even something like something as successful as Netflix, I mean, Netflix has never made a profit. It's all venture capital that's been thrown in there, and so they've never made money from that. But, I mean, that is still the belief. I mean, I work in the media industry personally, and it is still the belief that that is the future of television. So that would be where a lot of that money is coming from.
Guys, just having network money or the means to go on a network and having that platform, that in itself is not a guarantee of success. It's very simple. If Al Heyman brings us another version of the NFL, kudos. If he brings us the XFL, as one promoter told me, it'll be a disaster for all of us because he's going to ruin it for the next 20 years. So believe it or not, there are some in the business who, as much as they hate what's going on, if this should come to pass, they don't want this to be a failure.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder about 20 years. I mean, he'd have to really fail for it to be ruined for 20 years. I mean, how long is the deal, you know, NBC deal? You know, let's see how long it goes. What's his ultimate plan? And I also want to see, you know, how soon is it, you know, this next Floyd promotion, it's going to be all Mayweather promotions. How different will that be? And what will, you know, how to what extent is Al going to cut Golden Boy out? Is he going to phase them out, or is he going to treat them kind of like a bigger version of what he does with Luda Bella and the others?
Rob, is there anything else we can do for you?
No, just hopefully if he does set up some kind of network, it'd be great if there was some way that he gets a lot of the shows from around the world on there. That would be a real treat, kind of a cheap way of getting some extra stuff for some boxing fans. Even getting guys like you on there in some way. Imagine you two working for Heyman, that'd be a loss.
Yeah, you know, we tried to imagine it, and we simply couldn't because we're realists.
Yeah.
Okay. Robert, yeah, you're good at fighting, making fight picks. Donair or Walters this weekend? Who are you tabbing?
Oh, you know, actually, I'm going to the fights this weekend, and I'm taking my wife to boxing for the first time.
Okay.
So I thought, you know, I'd ease her in with possibly one of the most violent fighters since Mike Tyson, you know, to take her in that way. I'm going with Walters in that fight. I just get, I mean, everyone's heard the stories about Donair. It sounds like I just don't think that Top Rank would ever match somebody like Donair with Walters unless they were ready to catch him out. Bob Arum and the guys that run Top Rank are too smart to do that unless they really thought it's better off cashing him out against someone like Walters that we can build up rather than cash him out against, you know, a complete nobody that they'll never be able to build into a draw.
Hmm. All right, Robert, listen, I'll see you this weekend, okay?
I agree.
See you guys. Bye.
And I do agree with Robert. Let's face it. If Nicholas Walters was not under the Top Rank banner, would not be getting this fight. If you want to call in, the number, we have open phone lines, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
I was going to ask you, too, before we hit the call, the switchboard. What did you think? Did you see Anthony Joshua, and what did you think if you did?
I haven't seen it yet. My DVD is on the way. I did see the Bundridge-Molina fight, and the less said about that fight, the better. I'll say this.
Yeah.
Anthony Joshua, I've seen the rest of his fights. We know he can pitch, okay? If he can catch and he has a chin, I think that is the heavyweight future.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I really like the way he boxes. He's very fluid. I like his feet. He seems to be able to move backwards. It was a great punch. He landed, I believe, in the first round. He was moving back towards the ropes and then kind of stopped and let the right hand go and had the opponent, like, you know, walk right into the shot. He's really nice right now. I think what they're trying to do with him is working. I just want to see more. But I like that, you know, he's already scheduled to fight again next month. You know, he won in two rounds, didn't take any damage, just smiling the whole way through. Now he takes on Michael Sprott November 22nd. So we'll see.
Here's the thing.
Oh.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to go to a caller, but go ahead.
Gabe, I just want to make one note. I hear a lot of people saying, when is Joshua going to step up? Hopefully not for another couple years. I don't understand what the rush is. I really don't. I don't know that much about his background. I do know this. This is not a guy that grew up in a gym while in elementary school. He is still a relatively inexperienced guy compared to a lot of Olympians. And there's an old saying, heavyweights develop slower and older. And when you have a guy like this whose potential – I'm not going to bring up the name Lennox Lewis or anybody, but when his floor is Frank Bruno, I'm not listening to anyone but the boxing experts. I'm not being rushed into a fight that's going to ruin this kid. That's a case where I would not listen to the fans.
Absolutely not. They don't need it, you know. When David Price is already kind of calling him out, but I think it's just too soon, you know. He is taking out guys, I'll say, that, you know, in very impressive fashion. Surgically, he's not all wild. I mean, like Wilder, it was a couple fights back where he fell to the ground. He was so wild throwing his punches. And I feel like this guy's much more under control, really just knows, oh, if I can hit you with the right hand, I'm just going to keep doing that and break you down. I'd like to see him get to the body more. That's one thing. He's a bit of a headhunter. But if I had to buy stock in one, it would be in Anthony Joshua. In the 347, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Mike from Queens.
Mike, welcome to the next round.
Yeah, I caught onto the show late, so I didn't hear the whole thing. But do you think this Wilder-Stavern fight ever happens? Or
no.
Based on what's happening, and this is just a gut feel, if Al Heyman has anything to do with it, no.
Yeah, it sucks. And have you guys know, this is supposed to be Charlotte Barkley Center in December, but they haven't said who's fighting. Do you guys know by any chance?
Mike, here's, here's the interesting thing. Last week I was told by a source that Showtime, after Canelo made the move and they're going to fight Joshua Claudio, okay, that got expunged. I was told that one of the issues that Golden Boy was going to have was that they had already planned a show at the Barclays Center featuring Amir Khan. And I tweeted out that Golden Boy and Showtime were going to do a show December 6th at the Barclays Center. I was told today by a source at Golden Boy those plans have changed. So I'm being led to believe that I don't think that there will be a fight at the Barclays Center. But I could be wrong.
Yeah, because I was hoping for Rival Guerrero and Amir Khan. I think that would be a great fight.
Hold on. You don't want Danny Garcia against Rod Salko again? Oh, never mind.
I saw it the first time. I don't think there should be a rematch. That's me personally. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy.
Yeah. You know what? I think we speak for the masses there, Mike.
I guess I'm not going to another fight this year. All right. No problem, guys. I'll let you guys go.
Mike from the Bronx, thank you for the call if you want to call in. Gabe, before we get to the calls again, you mentioned the services of Dan Goosen, which were about, six, 7 days ago. I thought it was really a beautiful service. I know that it's a cliche to say it's a celebration of life, that we shouldn't be sad, we shouldn't be mourning. I really have to tell you, I think the game in the industry of boxing really deserves a thumbs up because a lot of his rivals, his contemporaries, ex-employees, people that didn't really have all that much to do with his life or his career, and certainly those that did, really showed up in mass. Oscar De La Hoya, Ken Thompson, Bob Arum is basically his whole staff. Don King traveled 3,000 miles. A lot of publicists that used to work for the company, publicists that work for neutral companies that have done work with John Beirute, plenty members of the media, both members of HBO and Showtime. I thought it really said a lot about what people thought of Dan Goosen through the ups and downs we've all had with guys. I think the boxing community really showed themselves well last Tuesday.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, it's growing up a boxing fan, and my brother and I were, Tom, who's a big boxing fan, and I were talking about this. It's like you do, the personalities do shine through. Dan was always right there before I was ever a writer. They're on my screen, and Joe, and you kind of feel their humanity, feel their character. They're a long-storied tradition, the Goosens, and their father was a detective. I think he was a homicide detective in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like a 70s action movie set in the San Fernando Valley. The Goosen family are just wonderful people, warm, and it did. I mean, I just looked around that room. There's about 1,000 people. And, both sides.
Standing room only, Gabe.
Standing room only. And it was an amazing eulogy by Rich Murata. You just look around and you go, man, you should be so lucky, to have a life like that where you've touched that many people. 1,000 people doesn't lie, and the what you could feel in that room as Rich described his friend from high school up until his death at 64, and what he was like, and the different aspects of him. It was really a special night. I'm so glad I took the trip and decided to be there because it was unbelievable. I'll never forget it.
Yeah, and kudos to Rich Murata.
It was amazing.
I thought his eulogy was pound for pound worthy stuff. And there are members from the California State Athletic Commission that came. Mauricio Sulaiman. Yeah. From the WBC, he showed up, and so I just really felt a lot of people, when you talk about paying respects, I think they really did that. And the thing I'll never forget, and me and Henry Ramirez, we joke about this, with all due respect, of course, and he tweeted this, I mean, he had an open bar and food trucks for free food. So basically, even at the very end, he's the host of this great party. Rest in peace, Dan Goosen. That's why we're going to miss you, big fella.
Yeah, like you said in your column, they had the maker's mark. They had the good stuff, and I was just, I drank for Dan. Yeah, I'm not much of a drinker. I drank for Dan, and it was really, I went out and had a Philly cheesesteak out back and just shared good memories. Alan Massengale, I got to, at the end of the night, I'm talking like Rich Murata and Al Bernstein. It was just, it's not like a name dropping thing. It was like just sharing. And I looked around, and I've always kind of, in my later years at Max Boxing, kind of put myself as an outsider to the sport and kind of pointing at it and saying these are the things that go wrong, and I don't care what you think about me as a person. Or I think you have to be a little bit rude in order to shake people up. People are kind of stuck in their politeness. But looking around the room, this sport is a family, and I think that's always been kind of the conundrum for me. Dan, just he really brought that home, the business and family.
You know, the thing that struck me in talking a little bit to his sons, Rex, and obviously Craig, who I've known for years, I remember having a great time. I went one of those junkets a year after you did to the Cayman Islands, ironically, for an Andre Ward fight. And I was there for about 4 or 5 days in 2008, and I still remember being out on the beach with this raft late at night in this warm Pacific Ocean or wherever it is. I think it's Atlantic Ocean. This tropical setting, and it's just great. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning, and we're kind of loaded, and we're floating away, talking about life. But the thing that struck me were the kids, were his younger sons that he had with Debbie. And back then, they were little kids, and now they're grown. Now they're graduating high school and going off to college. And the, Tom Brown, good friend of mine, his son is now pitching minor league baseball. And you're like, wow, time really flies. Gabe, let's get to a few more calls.
That's the irony of the situation is you and I have traveled farther for an Andre Ward fight than any of his fans. In the 310.
And they had to pay us. But you know what? They flipped the bill. Yeah. Come on.
They did. They certainly did. The 310, you're live on the next round. 310?
Hello. 310. Ooh, we got a knockdown.
Yeah. That's what Craig and I, every time we see each other, we always say we'll always have St. Lucia. This is an amazing trip. 860, you're live on the next round. I think it's CT.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
CT,
what's up, man?
Wouldn't be the same without you, man.
yeah, I'd like to talk about that doubleheader this weekend. I'm definitely picking Walter to win by stoppage, late stoppage. And I'm definitely picking Triple G to stop Rubio. I think Walters is too hungry at the moment. He's very big for a featherweight. And I think, Donaire's going to set traps early. I think he might do, somewhat have a, doing well at the beginning. I think Walters is going to get him late. Probably like a corner stop or something like that. And I think Triple G knocks Rubio out around the fifth or sixth round. It's possibly a body shot.
CT, I've always said about Nonito Donaire, he's very flashy but fundamentally flawed. And if he doesn't zap you with an early left hook that you don't see coming, he starts to run out of ideas and his fundamental flaws start to become apparent. And unless he hits that lottery punch late in that fight, much like in the rematch with Victor Chinian, that's where you start to see every single flaw in his arsenal. And that's why I always thought it was ridiculous that he was somehow number 3 pound for pound. I used to tell people, if he's the third best fighter, or if him and Sergio Martinez are number 3 and 4, there must be no good fighters left. And that's when I started saying pound for pound lists are really silly. And I think Donaire is a kid that grew up watching Roy Jones, and he replicated it pretty well in early in his career against smaller opponents, moving up to 12, 15, and 18. But I think now he's with the big boys. And when you start moving up in weight, unless you're that technically sound guy like a James Toney or Bernard Hopkins, those flaws become very, very pronounced.
That's the fundamental flaw with the pound-for-pound list is that it has to have 10 guys on it or 5 guys on it. And so when you have to have that, then you start lowering your standards in order to fill the list, as opposed to where it originally came from, which was, who's better, Joe Lewis or Sugar Ray Robinson? Well, who would win if they were, pound for pound? These guys have gotten it all wrong and inundated us with nonsense for years over this.
Yeah, but in fact, I wrote an article after the Donaire snoozer against that Argentinian, Narvaez, and I basically said, if you're going to do a pound for pound list, it needs to be Manny and Floyd in any order you want and then end it there. There really is nobody else at that point. And
yeah.
I think in retrospect, I was correct.
Roy Jones said that, actually, that it's never meant to be a list. There's pound for pound and, number one and then everybody else. And that's kind of the way it is. There's never like, my God, we have a field of 10 guys and I can't decide who's number one, so we better put them in some sort of order. It's just as stupid.
Mm-hmm. CT, anything else?
No, thank you. That's all.
All right. Thank you very much. Gabe, we have any more calls?
Let me see. I think there's another 787, but they may have dropped off. Yeah, 787. You're live on the next round.
Hello, guys. Do you hear me?
Oh, my God. Now the show is complete. Javier.
Exactly.
Wepa. Wepa.
How you doing, guys? First of all,
I'm doing well. What's going on?
I went to see Verdejo 2 weeks ago. I didn't call on last Monday. That guy is going to be a star. Let me say that. I know he beat a Villanueva, and he was supposed to beat him. But the way he knocked him out, he's going to be a star.
I have a Verdejo update. I think there's a very good chance he will return on December 13th in the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia. I think that's going to be announced sometime this week, Javier. So book your flight to Philly.
Guys, one more thing. We all been hearing rumblings that Chavez Jr. may fight, may sign with Al Heyman. And I was thinking, which fight, and a friend of mine pointed out this to me, which fight, if they don't make the Pacquiao, if Mayweather don't make the Pacquiao fight, could they really beat the Cotto Canelo? If they can somehow make Chavez Mayweather with the approval of Al Heyman, and Chavez can do 160, isn't that fight bigger than a Canelo Cotto on the Mexican day?
Okay, but Javier, here's my question. Which leg is Chavez going to chop off to get to 160?
Yeah, that's probably...
I mean, we can have all the fantasy fights we want. Here's the problem that I think Chavez has. Al Heyman is a very powerful guy. You know who's also very powerful and effective? Bob Arum's lawyers. Petrucelli and Moroso... You want to talk about a record. They are like Rocky Marciano. They're like 49-0, Gabe. They don't lose a lot of cases.
No, I just don't see it. I mean, I think these guys are looking around and seeing this money that's happening. Like, you know, and Al is kind of looking like the promised land, but there's this thing called the contract. And I don't care how big of a star you think you are or whatever franchise you think you are. And I think the junior franchise is a little bit tarnished. You know, it's the contract is going to hold. So these three guys, like you said, you know, next man up.
You know, Gabe, what's interesting, last night I was asking people, who's the next star outside of the quartet that I named, the Fearsome Foursome? And people kept bringing up Chavez and bringing up numbers from 2012. Gabe, we were there, one of those fights together, and I saw the other one. His numbers were diminishing. So you're right when you said the brand is waning.
Yeah.
And I get the distinct feeling, even the Mexicans, I think they're embarrassed because I think they're saying, this is not Sonny Corleone, it's Fredo.
Brutal. Yeah, a little bit. You know, he's the guy that wants the notoriety, he wants to be treated like a star, he wants to be in the right fights, but he's very limited, and he doesn't seem like he's a fighter. Like, he's not always trying to get better. I think he's just waiting for the next payday. I could be completely wrong. Maybe he's a super... Alex Ariza was really mad at me in one of our last interviews, I think the last interview we ever did, besides the one where he was chasing me around the parking lot. he said that, you know, that's not the Julio I know, this whole idea that he's lazy. But that also predates the, you know, training in his kitchen for Sergio Martinez. So
yeah.
I don't know what's going on with them. But to me, I want to see guys that want to fight. Like, give me Turiano Johnson, a guy that wants to be out there and get in there and mix it up. Curtis Stevens, who wants to be active, although I don't know what was going on in his last fight. You know, just give me scrappy guys. Give me Joel Diaz Jr. a little more often. That guy.
You know, it's very simple. Fighters who fight do. Fighters who don't. It's really come down to that. And what's the phrase this year? Next man up. Javier,
one
anything else we can do for
yeah.
you? Yes.
One last thing, guys. One last thing. If Cotto does fight Canelo and beat him in May, and I know you guys don't think Golovkin is going to get the big fight, but if Miguel does beat Canelo, and Miguel, one thing about Cotto is he always fights everybody. There are not that much holes in his resume. And he wants to do the bigger fight available, and he doesn't get Mayweather. Don't he have to do the Golovkin fight?
He can, but then here's what's going to happen. He's going to say, "Well, I'm the linear champion, and I don't, you know, I'll just dump the WBC." That's what they're going to do. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, just being realistic about it, I don't think Top Rank Listen, I give all respect to Miguel Cotto. He's fought a lot of guys that were risky. I just wonder at this stage of their life if they are going to take that risk. Anyway, Javier, we got to get running, okay?
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, well, that's it for this week's edition of The Next Round on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network. On behalf of Gabriel Montoya and the rest of the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network, this is Steve Kim saying goodbye, everybody.